Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Good morning, Jacob's Well. How are you doing? Great. Good to see you. Melissa Locke, who is in community engagement and many, many other things with us with Jacob's Well, is presenting as well. And then we also have Katie Leshak, who is our moderator. So like Justin said, it's on the back of your Sunday paper. You have these outlines in the back of your Sunday paper, and at the top corner up in that little box is a phone number. But it's also going to be on most of the slides. The phone number is up there too. So if you have a question, a comment, an idea, or something like that, just send them in to Katie.
This is the fourth week of a series called Carry Q, as Justin said, and I've heard a lot of people say, oh, when I come, oftentimes I feel like the message is just speaking right to me, and I can say I think this whole series was basically invented for me, and I'm finally starting to get it now, and I think having to speak about it forces that a little bit more even, but this is important stuff that we run into so many situations where our normal ways of helping each other and caring for each other really don't work. And not that they're bad ways, but they're not enough sometimes. And we need to find some new ways of being together when we run into that just real stuff that's going to happen.
So the first three weeks, weeks one through three, we're really talking about, so what are these Care IQ situations? We kind of talk about them as toolbox moments. When we get into these places where, like Melissa said, our routine ways of encouraging, supporting, advising just really aren't enough because they're in these tougher sorts of situations. What are those things and how do we understand them? Then we spent the next couple weeks really talking about what are the tools in our toolbox. And you heard Chris, particularly last week, just giving lots of great examples of how that's worked with his life. So this week we're taking it to the next step and we're saying, if pulling out the tools from your toolbox is really responding to a problem that's already in your midst, can't we do things that help us to be ready? And so we're calling this creating a care climate, okay? So what can we do in order to be ready, to be prepared, to have made our lives and our relationships ready to be good caregivers and good care receivers? And the feeling on the outline, if you want to fill those things in, is proactivity. We're talking about proactivity in your relationships. And we're talking about because it really does make a difference. And I think this is really important. Unless you think, well, this is just a lot of psychological, sociological kind of stuff. You know, aren't we a church? And yeah, exactly. Because we really don't see faith and life being two separate things. And while the Bible didn't have, you know, being 2,000 plus years old, didn't have our psychological paradigms to deal with, and it didn't use those kind of categories and languages, what we are talking about here is intrinsic to what Jesus was trying to prepare us to do, what the people of God, as they were coming together, were trying to understand and wrap their arms around. And as I start thinking about all this Care IQ stuff, I start thinking about, well, what was going on in the Bible? And without all the, you know, the language and stuff that we have today, weren't they trying to do the same thing? I picked out, this is on your Sunday paper, it's up on the screen. There's this passage from Ephesians. So Paul, who is one of the early followers after Jesus died and is spreading kind of this movement that Jesus had begun to the known world of his time, he's helping a community that is dealing with being in deep relationship with each other. And he's helping them understand, what do you need in order to be able to engage in life like it really, really is going to happen to you and be prepared for that? And so let me read this passage to you and then I'll kind of translate it into Jacob's Well speak at the same time, okay? So it starts out, it says, God's gifts were given. In other words, how God has equipped us and filled each one of us, were given to us to equip the saints for the work of ministry. In order to, what? To prepare us, those who are weaving their lives with others and God, for serving one another, right? And for building up the body of Christ, building up all those who are, you know, seeking to live in community with one another, united in God, until all of us come to the unity of the faith. In other words, as we come to one heart, we have harmony and we're able to be working together, and the knowledge of the Son of God. Now that sounds kind of weird, but in other words, that being able to see the world the way Jesus saw it, not superficial, not short-term thinking, but deeply, the way God pulls us in and helps us understand our lives with other people, to maturity, to the full measure of the stature of Christ, seeing the world like God does. We must not be children, tossed to and fro and blown about by every wind of doctrine, by people's trickery, by their craftiness and deceitful scheming. What he's saying, don't be naive. Don't be superficial. Don't fall for the smoke screens of relationships and the stuff that people try to fool you with purposely or unconsciously, but get beyond that. Speak the truth in love. Be ready. Grow up in every way. Become mature into him who is ahead, into Christ, the way God sees us and is calling us to be that. I mean, when you read that, I think, and you have this perspective of the Care IQ series, don't you hear us being called to be equipped, to be ready for the real stuff of life that we gathered around in order to be here for? And to realize it doesn't come easily, it doesn't come naturally, but we have to kind of transcend ourselves. We have to be prepared to do some things that might be a little counterintuitive, a little bit awkward, but the places that God calls us into, and that really do make sense once we go there. So anyway, so all that said, here's the deal. Here's why we want to talk about creating a care climate. And it's, first of all, you have to know, and these are on your outline, but creating a care climate and, you know, becoming as mature in these things as you possibly can, one, does not crisis-proof your life, all right? There is no way by, you know, becoming this, you know, as knowledgeable about these things as possible, you ever crisis-proof your life. You may remember on this next slide here, on week one, we talked about all these situations which are kind of Care IQ situations, and we named these for people listening to the podcast, because I'll just read them really quickly. Divorce or separation, abuse, unemployment, foreclosure, bankruptcy, mental illness, homelessness, prolonged illness, addiction, death, raising special needs children, caring for aging parents, legal problems. I mean, the list could go way on. I mean, these are not things, mostly things, that you can avoid. I mean, they happen to us, all right? You can't crisis-proof your life. What you're doing is making yourself more able to deal with these things when they do come
up. Yeah, and that's that next fill-in that we can't avoid it, but we can become more robust, more strong and resilient. I think it says strength and resilient are built in this climate of care that we're talking about.
Right. And then another key thing that happens is that when we create a care climate, we're able to break down the obstacles of shame and stigma. Shame and stigma, gotta go, folks. What they do is they get between us and being real with each other. They put us in, they give us permission to be in denial, to pretend things aren't really happening, just to not be dealing with the issues that are there. And we got to get past that. If you think about that list one more time, think about how many of those are associated with shame and stigma in our society. Most of them are, and that is not helpful.
And when we have this climate where that is named as not being helpful, it's a really powerful place to build a team of people that can be supportive for you. And so to create those significant relationships, they happen in a climate like this. And it doesn't allow you to just bypass all difficulties, but some maybe. Maybe some you can. If you have a climate that could maybe prevent something from becoming a huge crisis and be met when it's a little easier to deal with and hasn't caused so much pain yet, I think that can happen. It's my hope, at least.
Basically, we have this mantra at Jacob's Well that about practice when it's easy so you have the skills you need when it's not. It's something we say a lot. Practice when it's easy so you have skills you need when it's not. That's in that little text box, and there are two blanks there, and the words there are tools and experience. We've been talking about that through this whole series. When we talk about that you have the skills you need, those are the tools. What are the things that you can do in these Care IQ situations, and the experience of using those tools? Let me give you a quick example of this from kind of another world. Is my son, who's now in grad school, but a couple of years ago, he was a competitive canoeist and kayaker. And one time he brought one of his hardcore competition kayaks to a lake, and he and I would mess around with it. So he shows me, gets in and shoots all over the place. I said, can I try it? I mean, I've been in canoes and stuff since I was a little kid. I can do this, right? So he laughs at me and says, go ahead and try. So this kayak is 18 feet long and barely wide enough for my hips. And I get in it, he's holding it, I get in it, and he lets go, and whoosh, I hit the water. I tried this at least 20 times. My total time upright in the kayak was less than 4 seconds. I never even got my paddle in the water. Every time, just choo, like that.
Is there a video of this?
Yeah. I hope not. I said, Jordan, how do you do this? He says, we didn't start in kayaks like this. We started in real basic kayaks, and we kept moving up till we got to these class 4 kayaks. You don't start here, Dad. I mean, so you have the tool, but you need experience. And that class 4 kayak was the hardcore Care IQ situation you're in. And you can have the tools for this, but unless you're using them when it was easy, you may find yourself just blown away when it's hard, even though you've got the tool.
Yeah, so that's a really good segue into this next thing about creating a care climate by normalizing conversations and practices. I think in the climate that we generally live in our culture, we're really, really good and practiced at avoiding these taboo topics and dancing around them, using humor, distraction, or even unconsciously not bringing them up and protecting ourselves from them because we don't want this stuff to be happening to us and to the people that we love. And it's just so hard. It's hard. Yeah. And so we sometimes go to those platitudes Chris talked about last week or other ways of just changing the subject or kind of getting it over with as soon as possible. That was the one thing that all the like professional people that we talked to about this series said, we need to start talking about things earlier before they become a crisis. We'll say more about that, but it was so important.
Yeah, so normalizing conversations and practice. And those two words, normalizing, but then conversations and practice. And the first word there then is to talk about care issues before they ever become a crisis. Or maybe even just say, we talk about care issues even when they're not a care crisis. So we get used to that language. There's so many issues, as Melissa said, and just even so many words that are hard for us to say. And how do we break down those barriers? And creating places in our routines where we can have these conversations around hard topics, and that is normal for us. At Jacob's Well here with us, this is one of our big things that we try to do with what our gatherings are about is we try to normalize conversations. Stuff that we know all of us, and certainly this is true for us, we need to be able to talk about in our own lives. How can we begin those conversations here so that we kind of normalize that and it's not so hard for you to talk about in your own lives? So like the first week when we started this Care IQ series, we went through that list of 13 things. And I asked you all to raise your hands when they were true for you. And then we asked, you know, everybody, if you had more than one of these, raise your hands. And everyone could look around the room and say, pretty much everyone in here has had several of these be true in their lives. I mean, the way of normalizing those issues in our lives, it's not just me, we all share this. It's so important for us to do. So we talk about things like racism, and we talk about money issues, we've talked about pornography addiction, we talk about relationship stuff, and we do it over weeks, not just a couple minutes of it in an isolated time, but we're going to spend a month dealing with this to try to normalize it for you. And I think that's really important for us to do. One of the things we talked about, one of those words I think that is hard for a lot of people to say is therapy. Because like going to a counselor or talking to a friend about something, you know, that's okay because that's normal. But if you have to go to therapy, there's something wrong with you, you know? And it shouldn't be that way, is it? I mean, a person who is going to be proactive, that's going to create a care climate, probably uses therapy as a way of making sure they stay healthy. In fact, I was thinking about it. We do these couples in relationship workshops fairly often. And I think from now on, we're going to call them therapy. Just so like, you know, we get used to saying, yeah, my wife and I or my partner and I or my friend and I, we're going to go to therapy this week. I think we need to get over that.
Yeah.
I'm over it.
You're over it. Good. A lot of people are. And a lot of people
aren't.
I think
a lot of people are over that one.
Good. Well, help others get over it. Normalize the conversation.
And just practicing preventive maintenance before issues have a chance to develop. I mean, when we were talking with Christina Swanberg from Mental Health Connect, which is a wonderful resource, we have information about them, just building bridges into long-term solutions for mental health situations. But she was saying, a doctor would never say to a patient, you know, I see that you're experiencing some early signs of cancer, but why don't you just stay put and just come back when it gets really bad, you know? They don't do that. So why do we wait until it really becomes painful and difficult and dangerous to talk about our mental health with each other? We need to help each other out earlier in the process. And, you know, maybe they're just regular things that we can build into our lives. This brought to mind a habit that our family has built that I've honestly felt kind of nerdy telling people about in the past. But I think it is I hope that it's becomes a powerful thing in our kids' lives in the future. But just on Saturdays, we have pancakes. I'm sure a lot of you do. And instead of just putting pancakes on the table, we also have a couple of regular questions that we just get really good at, have been asking each other now since Andrew was 6. He's now 13. Or maybe he was even younger, but go around and just everybody is invited to share compliments and appreciations with the other people at the table, and then everyone gets to ask, do you need any help with a problem? And so then you have permission to come, you can have problems, you know, and we can help each other with them. It's okay. And honestly, most weeks nobody has anything, and the kids just want to get it over with and, you know, move on. But I hope that space in our routine that we create helps. So I'll let you know in 10 years, I guess, how that turns out.
But. Right. You know, and, you know, I can imagine other things, like if you're a group life group, we'd all say, there's some things that are hard for us to kind of make ourselves do as individuals, but if I know everybody else in my group is doing it, then it's okay. Like, so what if everybody in your group life would say, in the next 3 months, we're all going to see a financial coach. Doesn't matter whether you think you're on top of your budget already or not. We're all going to do that. Or what if you said in the next months, we're all going to go do a therapy session with a couples counselor, whether we think we need it or not. And we'll all just do it because we're going to be proactive. We're going to build that kind of practice in.
So the thing that came to my mind as we were talking, and fortunately came out in the text as well, is shame. I think that's a really, really, really important concept. For me, when you were talking, I was thinking about shame versus guilt. Like, I feel guilty when I do something wrong, but shame is different in that it's the sense of being not enough or weak, or I think mainly not enough for me is what it feels like, which are two different things. So I don't know if you want to talk about that, but before you do, there were two kind of flip sides of the coin that came out in the text, and one was just talking about that sense of shame and describing it as one of the most suffocating things a person can deal with. And I think that sense of suffocation, I mean, that really creates a picture of how kind of pervasive it is and how all-encompassing and affecting that can be. And that a lot of people give up in church, because when you try to come forward with your mistakes or whatever, I mean, I think we bring enough sense of our own shame, but then other people piling on top of it, if we try to share it, that doesn't help, actually. So having a space that is safe, where people feel like they can be vulnerable, has been meaningful to this person at Jacob's Well. So I thought that was really helpful to hear. And then kind of on the flip side, someone asked, if you are dealing with a friend or family member or whatever, and you feel like they are making a mistake, how do you approach that without bringing shame and stigma to the picture?
I think understanding both guilt and shame together is really important, because often the way we talk about guilt, we're really talking about shame. I mean, guilt is not a bad thing. It's sort of an honest evaluation of yourself, to saying, I think I screwed up, or I think there's something missing right now. And that can be healthy, because it lets you know how you want to be different. When it turns to shame, it's becoming unhealthy, and I think you articulated that really well. So to understand the difference between those is really important. And the one, that last part, like, how do I correct someone, so to speak, or, without turning that into shame? In some respect, shame comes from within. I mean, I can use my language to try to pull it out of you, but you have to feel shame. Resilience, becoming shame resilient, or shame, it's not the word
I'm busting.
Yeah.
Shame
but
busting.
So that's important. But I really do think shame is really huge. And one of the major tools in our toolboxes really should be, how do I help people not feel shame? And that would be a tool that I would hope all of us get really good at using, and finding ways to save people from the shame they may be experiencing, and not projecting them on them, helping them understand their worth, etc. Like all these things, there's no formula for that, but I think one of the most important tools in our toolboxes is, how do I diffuse shame in people's lives?
I think, just the fact that we're talking about a climate and being around other people who are open and vulnerable, and you realize they're part of your rope, and everyone is this self that is flawed, and they're part of this bigger thing, and this bigger message that you are worthy. Just that's bottom line. And to be in a climate, just that word suffocation, I thought, yeah, it can be really suffocating. So can we be fresh air? Can we make fresh air for people so they can breathe again and start seeing themselves differently, ourselves differently? I think we might get into that too with how these teams work and stuff.
Big important subject.
Yeah.
Just a couple of things. Someone mentioned Brené Brown, and she does have a really great couple of podcasts that are that go into shame and guilt.
Yeah.
I'm describing guilt as the feeling of having done something wrong versus shame as a person you are wrong or you are less.
Yeah.
Try to share those on Facebook because those are great.
Yeah, those are good. And then a question that comes up, why am I my most powerful critic? I think we're really, really good.
Yeah, we're so hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that your insight into yourself is one of your greatest assets, and it can also become one of your greatest enemies. You know, and I think those strengths, those ability to perceive who you are and what you're doing and what you're not doing is a great gift because it can drive you forward, but it can also then turn on you and become that dark side for yourself. And, you know, I guess I would say one of the answers to that is we're going to be talking in just a minute here about a team. And one of the ways of keeping that in perspective, keep my own self-criticalness in perspective, is by sharing those feelings with others and letting other people tell me how they see me and, you know, how good or bad I am at these things and so on. And I think we need to diffuse ourselves by getting other voices into our heads other than just ours, voices that no one understands.
I think it's been so powerful for me when people have known me well enough to say, you know, they've seen me be there before, or they've been there, and they say, you've been here before, remember? We've been here before, and we came out the other side, and we can do it again. Like, this happens, and this is hard, but we've been here before. I have found that to be really powerful when those moments of self-criticism or shame are rearing their heads.
And I think also reminding people or being with people to be as kind to themselves as they would be to someone else that they love in a similar situation.
Yes, absolutely. Amen. You guys should be preaching up here.
So to kind of keep this rolling here, creating a care climate by normalizing conversations and practices is really a key piece. But another really important piece is creating a care climate by building a team. We can't say enough about this. I mean, this is so intrinsically woven into the DNA of Jacob's Well that we try to create a team. We have this image that we've used quite a bit at Jacob's Well. In fact, we've done a couple of messages about it, about the bus and everyone having a bus with the seats of, you've got your encourager, your truth teller, you've got the mentor, you've got your learner, you've got your stretcher, and you've got your yin to your yang on the bus. That's one way of thinking about it, kind of a very distinct way of understanding, like, who is your team. But I think in a little more casual way of just understanding, having these people around you who know you and understand you. Because think about this, when you get in a care IQ situation, a toolbox moment of your own, there is nothing you need more right then than other people who know and understand you. Now, the truth is, it is never too late to create a team. I don't care if you never did it and now the, you know, proverbial life has hit the fan, make a team now if you don't have them. But think about it, folks, in terms of creating a care climate ahead of time. When you're in that moment, do you have the time necessarily to pull that team together? Do you have the energy to pull that team together? And that team that you suddenly pulled together, do they have the experience of knowing one another and knowing you, knowing and understanding you, that they're really going to be tuned in to be able to be really helpful to you? Now, like I said, it's never too late. You can always pull that team together, but just think how powerful it is to get that team pulled together ahead of time. And one thing that I've heard pushback from people is saying, well, you know, I thought about doing that, but it seems so selfish for me to ask these people to always be there for me. It says, you're missing it. It's a team, folks. This is not all about you. Those people are here for you to be on your team, but you are on each of their teams as well, all right? This is the idea that everyone is a caregiver and a care receiver all the time. You are there for each other. You are not being selfish in having those people on your team because you're on their team at the same time. You know, the power of this team is maybe kind of understood well when you think about kids. A lot of you folks here, you've got kids or you remember when you were young and having those supportive adults in your life. There's an organization that's actually based here in Minneapolis called Search Institute, and they've done a lot of research on what helps kids grow up to be successful adults. And I use that word successful in a very healthy way. And they've identified these 40 assets. And one of the key assets that is like, can this child name at least three adults who know, non-parental, right? You can't count your parents, who know them and care about them for their own sake. And if they do, they found that that is one of the most powerful indicators that they are going to be able to grow into being, you know, good contributing members of society, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, so that's a good question. Like, ask yourself, do my kids have three adults who, like, know them for their own sake, not just through me as an adult, but for their own sake, and they can name who those adults are? Go ask your kids. Tell me, who's in your life like this? Ask them to list those people.
There's a story from last Wednesday. The middle school group got together for their group life experience, and Jim and Heidi have had them name those people, like, who are in your circles? And, like, they had met with a mental health professional, Jen, who's part of Markworth, who's part of Jacob's Well, and she was explaining that, you know, your frontal cortex isn't developed yet. You need people with developed frontal lobes, or at least more than you, to help you sometimes when you run into things. And so who are those people? And they wrote these names in circles, and then they said, okay, now I want you to, you know, pick one of those people that you're going to tell this week and tell them that they're in your circle, or find a way to let them know. And one of them said, you mean I'm supposed to tell my teacher that he's like an encourager for me? And they said, yeah, do it. And so think of the difference that could make for that teacher to feel appreciated and for that, and also to see that kid as like, wow, this kid is really going to use this relationship. I might even be there for them more then. So,
yeah, I mean, how many of you don't want your kids to have at least three people like that? I mean, really. I mean, how many of you can see that maybe in this community, this could be a great place, not the only place, but a great place to have those kids, those people for your kids? You know, yeah. I mean, I think that'd be, how many of you would be willing to be that person for someone else's kids? I am. I'm willing to do it. And look at that, all right? Write that on your communication card. You just volunteered for youth ministry. I mean, but seriously, you know, so you, some of you might say, you know, you get a phone call from Heidi or from Jim, we need someone to do this. They're not looking for people to fill spots, folks. They're looking for people to be on the teams with these kids. They're trying to develop relationships, care IQ relationships with these kids. They want you to know them by name. They want you to understand them. So when you see them on Sunday morning or other places in the neighborhood, you talk to them with their name and ask them how things are going and just have a relationship with them. Maybe you take them out to the malt shop sometime. I mean, you do stuff like that.
There are about a dozen people doing that right now. Should we give them a big whoop whoop?
Yeah.
Ready? 1, 2, 3. Woo! Woo!
Did you hear that? Probably not. So this is that next feeling is these supportive relationships work best when they're natural and authentic, you know, not forced. That's why we don't have an official mentoring program. Everyone sign, I will be a mentor, and then we will match you randomly with someone. I mean, that can work. It can be really powerful. Probably some of you experience that. But it happens best when it's kind of natural and authentic. So as an adult, and I would say this includes high school kids or even middle school kids, you should be seeing yourself as a mentor for some younger kids. You know, who are the three young people in your life that you have access to that you say, well, I'm kind of friends. I mean, it's my niece or my nephew or my next door neighbor. But I don't know that I've really taken it to the point where they would write down my name as this other adult that cares about them. I mean, can by next week all of us say, yep, I know three kids. Maybe they will, maybe they won't, but they may very likely would list me as that adult. And if you want to do that through our kids' ministries or just even explore it, put that on the back of your communication card. We'd love to let you give you more information about it, and then you decide. You figure it out after that.
Can I just inject here? That is very transformative. I've noticed it turns it from work into something totally different, a lot more fun when you look at it that way. That happened to me a few weeks ago.
All right.
Cool. Bingo. There we go. Testimonial. Awesome. But this is true. Another Jacob's Well mantra. We get to do this.
Yeah.
From the outside, it sometimes looks like have to. When you actually experience it, you say, I get to do this. This is cool. This is good stuff. And it is. So, you know, that natural and authentic thing is cool, but one of the problems with these natural and authentic relationships is that we just wait for them to happen. Then it's got to be natural. I'm not going to force it. I'm sorry. There's a level of intentionality that is required, and that's there. Supportive relationships work best when they're natural and authentic, but you're going to have to be intentional to make it happen. And I think that's important. So telling this guy, yeah, go tell your teacher he's one of his encouragers. Do you think that didn't change that teacher's attitude towards that kid? Really? Wow. I mean, I've been doing that kind of, but I didn't realize I was getting through that way, and then I perceived that way. Maybe change that teacher's attitude towards all the kids that he or she was being encouraging towards. So that's important stuff. So when we were talking about this, I'm a pastor. Jesus comes to mind, right? So there's this verse in Matthew 9. I'll just read the verse first. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax booth, and he said to him, "Follow me." And Matthew got up and followed him. All right, duh. Now the context is that Jesus has been traveling, speaking, showing compassion, healing thousands of people for months. All right? Wouldn't he think that the natural, authentic thing is that some of them will decide to follow me and become my disciples? Well, maybe, but he doesn't rely on that. He sees Matthew and says, "I want this guy," and he goes and he asks him. He just says, "Follow me," and Matthew follows. Now, Jesus is recognizing the way it works. This is how we're put together. We need to be asked specifically to know that we have a place that Matthew is wanted. He's got a place at that table with Jesus. And we need to do the same thing too. We need to tell these people that we want them on our teams.
All right. Sometime either on Facebook or now, you should tell the story about dinner with your family.
No, I was going to do it after you say this next thing here.
No, I already said that.
You did. Okay, yeah. So with Elliot's story, you saw that he was both invited his teacher then to be on his team, but he was purposeful. He said what? He said, he didn't just say, "I really like you." He says, "You're my encourager. What's the purpose?" And I think being transparent and open about what is the purpose of your team, right? You're not just kind of my buddies that I like to hang with, but I really want you guys to be here for support for me. And I want to be here for support for you in the tough stuff of life. Can you think about how that could be transformative to this group of people you get together for someone to say out loud that this is one of the reasons why we're together? I'll give you a little story about this. So a week ago Thursday, getting ready for Natalie's wedding, my sister and her husband, two of my sisters, one from California, one from Texas, were in town with their husbands already. And then all of our four kids were in town, and we all went out to dinner together. My sister, busy lives, right? One in California, one in Texas. We don't see each other very often. And my kids are in California, Florida, here. I mean, I don't think we'd been together, all of us, around one table for 5 years, maybe. And so we're there, and we're at Marla's Caribbean on 38th and Bloomington. You're welcome, Marla, for that free plug. And fantastic place. And we're along, and this long table, all right? And it's noisy. Everybody's talking at once. And I'm feeling, okay, this is great. I get to talk to the person beside me and across the table, but I want to hear everybody's story, and I want my sisters and their husbands to hear all of my kids' stories, because I'm a really kind of fiercely proud dad. And so we were getting ready to order, and I just stopped everything, and I said, okay, I know this sounds kind of weird, but can we just like all go around the table, and everybody's got 3 minutes to say, this is what's going on in my life right now, because I want everybody to hear it. And one of my daughters said, yeah, and you can't just talk about your kids. You got to say what's going on in your life. And so it really kind of, interrupted. It felt sort of awkward for me to impose this on the group. But what I was doing is saying, there's a purpose to our gathering here, and I don't want just the casualness, what's the easiest, the bottom line to prevail. But let's make sure we really seize this for what it was. And I think everyone really appreciated the fact that we did that. I mean, we went all the way through the ordering, waiting for our food, and on into the dinner before we made it all the way around the table. But it was really neat, and it would not have been the same if I hadn't like swallowed hard and say, I can take control of the situation and do that.
Yeah, I think it is that moment of like, ooh, should I do it or not?
Yeah,
to try it.
I'm the extroverted pastor guy, and it was hard for me. So, okay. Yeah, don't be apologetic about asserting a purpose to your team. So the other thing, another thing about this team, and that I think you're going to find is really important, is that you need people who will never reduce you to the single story. You know what I mean by that, the single story? You are more than your problem, and it's so easy to get reduced to your problem. I'm the divorced person. I'm the person with cancer. I'm the one experiencing depression. I'm the one who just lost his house. You need people in your life that will not reduce you to that single story, but remember everything about you. You're not reduced to your job. You're not reduced to your blue-collar income. You are not reduced to the street you live on. You are not reduced to the fact that you're single or whatever.
You're not reduced to being the pastor of this community.
That would be horrible.
And just be you.
I can just be me. That's right. Yeah. And you need people that will always see you for who you fully are. And part of the reason is they need to remind you of that. They need to hold you accountable to your full story so that you don't just become a care receiver in those situations, but you realize you are still also a caregiver in those situations. And you do that for each other. And there is nothing, I don't know if there's any single thing that can help a group be more healthy than to always remember everybody's full stories and not let anyone at any time be reduced to a single story.
Question.
Did you have some
one
stuff?
Little comment / question. Balancing caring for others versus self-care. So what do you do when you're in this caring relationship and someone needs something from you that you really cannot offer because you need to take care of yourself in a certain way?
Roll.
What did you say? Roll.
Roll.
Yeah,
roll.
That's the answer,
yeah,
folks.
I think that's been helpful. Stop, drop, and roll. Isn't that it? wait, no, that's something else.
So that's been one of the recurring themes, and actually we're going to be talking about it here in a little bit again. But when you're in a care IQ situation, one of the first things you want to ask yourself is not what should I do, or what am I even being asked to do, but what is my role in this situation? Because these are usually unfixable situations. Meaning there's nothing you can say or do right now that just makes it all go away and it'll get better. And it may be something that you are personally not equipped. You need someone with more specialized skills or a different kind of relationship with that individual. So I think if you ask that role question, that's the first step towards self-care, is that I'm not just getting sucked in. Remember, we talked about differentiation, not just becoming embroiled with the emotion and that other person's problems and riding the roller coaster with them, but you differentiate from say, what is my role here? And then I think, like I said, that's the first step towards self-care. And then you say, well, what can I do for you? And that might, being clear that I am not the fixer, it is your problem is not my responsibility, but what can I do for you? Can I help you get connected to? Can I broaden our team? Those kinds of questions.
And I think seeing ourselves as part of a larger thing, like it's not just up to me. I'm part of a whole system, a weaving here, hopefully, and...
It's really easy for me to sit at this table right now and say that. Yeah. When I'm in that situation, it's really hard to do that. Again, that's why you practice when it's easy, so you have the skills you need when it's not. All right? You address a lot of your normal situations at work, at home, in group life, with saying, well, what is our role here? What is my role in this situation? So that when, all of a sudden your friend comes over and the whole world has fallen apart, you have that line, you have that understanding kind of baked in, and you're ready to, how to use it a little bit better.
I remember just like the fact that we are talking about ourselves as both givers and receivers of care all the time, and if we can keep that in front of us together, I think that we need each other to be whole. Like, I need you to be taking care of yourself so that you can be strong for me, and to give ourselves permission that it's not selfish to take care of yourself. It's kind of your responsibility. It's your job. And it's okay to say, this is not what I'm doing right now. I need to do this, and I can, but what I can do later is X, Y, Z. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think this will keep coming up. I mean, we've got group life going on here with Jacob Swell, and really, this is a place where we find relationships like this. It's not the only place, but it is a great place to develop, practice, and experience this Care IQ stuff. We can start creating this different kind of climate that we're talking about, where it's okay and safe to put this stuff on the table and really grapple with it together. Group life is about significant relationships, and we talk about that as being this place, this climate where you can share real stuff of life and where trust builds over time. And we expect to grow. We're not going to stay stuck in these tough situations that we find ourselves in or just where we are. We're always evolving and changing, and where we can get this care that we're talking about in a holistic way, and we see each other bigger than. I set an alarm for us, Greg.
We're violating it.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Our timer just went off. And actually, we're going to be talking about that too. I mean, just this importance of setting up a structure and some intentionality about group life so that you can, as meeting with hosts, we talked about what can we do to maximize the magic or the potential of group life and minimize the muck. There's enough muck just with regular life. Like, can we set some stuff up, some intentionality then, be proactive to really make the best use of it? And we made a video to help groups have that conversation, so I want you to watch that. It's short. What is the best thing about group life? Significant relationships. What's the worst thing about group life? Significant relationships. I mean, really, it is the best that you have people to share real life stuff with. And it's the worst to have people sharing real life stuff with you. And it is the best to have people that you learn to trust. And it can be the worst to have people trusting you with big stuff. And it's the best to have people that care about each other and you know what the needs are and you're able to give them. But it's the worst to have to care for each other and let yourself be cared for. That can be really tough. It's the best to be with people who are about growth and change. They're not happy just with the status quo. But it's the worst to be with people who expect growth to happen, because growth means change, and change can be hard and uncomfortable. So you might be wondering, I think you've gotten yourself into an amazing and unique opportunity. I mean, where else can you find a place to form such significant relationships so quickly and deeply and richly around a common conversation where you're not expected to all agree, but you're invited to dig into some really important questions and given some language and tools to do it with? Mostly, this is going to be really fun. We get to do this. Sure, it's not always going to be easy, convenient, and comfortable. The best stuff in life isn't. But that's why we do it together. And that's why you're taking time to watch this video and lay some healthy groundwork for your group. So there are a few things we know about healthy, vibrant groups. Here's an example. Healthy groups look less like this and more like this. Number two, no one is ever forced to share, but always invited. And whatever you do share will be kept in confidence. What's shared in the group stays in the group. So, how do you feel about silence? Get comfortable with silence. Some great stuff happens in the space that it creates. And finally, healthy groups are intentional. You have hosts that make sure that your group stays intentional about a few really important things. So there are a lot of right ways to do group life, and your group will find the most authentic way to you. And, you know, it won't be perfect every time, and each time you get together won't be some magical transformational evening necessarily, but over time, that's when the magic happens. So stick with it and trust each other and trust the process and trust God. Thank you for being part of this experiment. All right. Yay. That's fun.
So, yeah, you know, there are lots of ways of creating these teams. We really, you know, group life isn't the only thing, but we really believe at Jacob's Well, we thought this from the beginning, that we need these kinds of significant relationships where that shared trust, grow, and care happen. And so we create a group life as a way of doing it for people, and then doing it also around these conversations that we try to normalize here, and then you get to use, you know, in the context of your groups and then in your regular life, the rest of your life as well. So this idea of creating intentional structure in these teams so that you can then do some healthy improvising. All right. I mean, that's the balance you're always going to have with these teams. Certainly, you're going to have in group life all the time. It's like, how do we balance the stuff that we know really keeps us healthy as a group and really accomplishes the purpose of this group, but at the same time, we respond to what's going on in people's lives? And you do that, I think, is by having, at the beginning, having an outset and understanding of this is what our group is about. This is the things we covenant about that are really important to us. If you share that and you revisit it so it's there, then when you do improvise because something has blown up, whatever, you're able to do it in healthy ways that don't get you off track. So some of those intentional structures are very external, like just real basic things, like we start on time. If you're in town, you make every effort to be here because this is important to all of us. We start on time, we finish on time because we have to respect people's time. Then you have some more internal things as well, like this is the purpose of our group. We're all here to share, to trust, to learn to trust, to grow together, and to care for one another. So some weeks, maybe we move more on one side, but we come back and we try to balance these together in the long run as a group. And that's a way of keeping ourselves healthy. And knowing that those structures are there allow you to, like I say, do that improvising, but to keep it healthy.
And I think it's an important time to say that a lot of our groups have really bumped into some of this tough care stuff, and I think sometimes we'd say, oh my gosh, I think we did something wrong, like this is really hard, what are we doing wrong? And I think, you know what, we are not doing anything wrong. We're doing something right when we run into these hard care situations in our groups. It means we're allowing that stuff to come up, and that's really how this series was born, is saying, yeah, that's how we want to be, a community where this stuff comes up, and we want to have tools to deal with it better. So I think what happens in this, we're more able to see the situations that are maybe getting a little more serious or becoming a toolbox moment better in this kind of intentional, improvisational place that Greg was talking about. But what do we do then when something big comes up, even in our family, but right now, like thinking about groups? I think that this is really important to just come back to that role. And so group life stops and says, or even in your family, stop and say, what is our role here? And let's really get clear about that together. So taking the time to do that is important. Many of us have needs, most of us have needs that need to be met from beyond that group, but the group can still have a role. And so maybe if you get really good at using these timers and setting up so that when you're checking in, it doesn't end up taking the whole time. And but every once in a while, after you've gotten used to using these, you might come up against something and say, you know, Greg, it sounds like this seems like something we should talk about more. Like, would it be helpful if we take 20 minutes and set a timer and dedicate that time to just making space for this? And what would be helpful to you today we can do?
And if we don't have that understanding that, okay, you know, that it's okay to only spend 20 minutes on a really, really serious issue that's coming up, if you don't have that at the beginning, it feels really awkward, maybe even a little passive-aggressive to insert it when the time comes. And think about why this is healthy. It's because, first of all, this group isn't only about you, and it isn't only about caregiving. And the situation, the reason why it feels like we need to spend all available time talking about this particular situation, the reason you feel that is because it's unfixable, right? So even if you spend 1,000,000 hours on it, you still wouldn't have fixed it. How do you keep that in proportion and ask this question, well, what's our role with this crisis and what can we do about that? So maybe you set aside 20 minutes and after 15 you say, okay, now this is really good. I think we're starting to understand things a little bit. What can we do here that would make a difference?
Yeah, and Chris gave a lot of concrete ideas last week, but sometimes you won't know. And the person you're asking, they'll say, I don't know. I don't know what I need. I don't know what to ask for. And that's a hard moment, and that's a moment where...
And that's maybe when you simply do something like, I think we've got a knot in the rope right here, right now, and we're going to tie that, and we're going to take a little time of silence and just keep you in our prayers and thoughts, and then we're going to move on and check in with you before we're all done today, but kind of trusting that this other conversation, the grow part of our group, is also going to address some of these things that are going on and help us move, get us off the dime, so... Trusting that process is important, and I think we need to do that. The last thing here is that group life never forgets that everyone can both give and receive every time, okay? And we've been making this point from week one, and you've heard it a couple times a day. We can't say it enough. This is so important that we never reduce someone to their single story, right? That we all realize that everyone there is a caregiver and a care receiver every time we gather. Chris last week was talking about recognizing the image of God within each and every one of us, that even though this person is really hurting, there is a way that the light shines from that person today to other people as well, and that needs to happen. And also, just because one person's care need seems to be way up here, that doesn't mean that other people don't have care needs that they brought in that need to be addressed as well. And, you know, that's the worst thing that you'd want is someone went home from your group and said, I came really feeling like I wanted to share something with the group and get some support from people, but this other person really trumped me with theirs, so I never even got to share mine. You know, so everyone is a caregiver and a care receiver all the time, and it's a great way of honoring the wholeness that we have and the fact that we're all in this together, that we're a team.
I kind of like to think about it like more like a potluck than fast food. So I don't kind of drive up to Jacob's Well or to Group Life and I say, give me what I need, and they hand it out and then I leave. It's we all bring and we put things on the table. And then we all get to glean from that what we need. And we know what we need, and if we don't, it comes, you know, over time. And so I think that we try to do that on Sundays, too. We bring things to the table, and today we'll have an experience of that with communion here in a minute, and the band's going to be playing a song to help us get into that. But I really think we need to keep practicing all this stuff together, of being a real space where we can bring our whole selves here, and, like, I don't have a communication card, but if you take yours out, you may have already written on it, and I hope you have. We get these back with some really honest and real stuff, whether it's feedback or, you know, questions or prayers, requests for help. And I encourage you to really use those any week, but especially today. If you got a card and haven't had a chance to write on one of those for a while, at least jot your name down or make a smiley face or something, and just consider that as a way that this is how we are a community. We bring ourselves to the table in these concrete ways of sharing communion and turning in these cards, and even our offering is like that we put all of ourselves together and we become something bigger together that creates a climate that's so healthy and where we can grow and care for each other. And I am super thankful for that. So take this song to just be comfortable in your own whole self skin that's both flawed and whole at the same time. And you can use that time to write on your communication card and get your offering ready. And you can bring all that up actually when you come for communion. Greg will give you a cue in a little bit, but just be with this song for now.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you, too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have, too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.